The government remains shut down. Today, we hear President Elkridge's thoughts on the crisis and his presidency thus far. I'm Kevin Fever, and this is The Weekly. President Elkridge, welcome back to the show.
Welcome back, Mr. Fever.
Feels like that every once in a while.
After a long time.
Definitely.
Yes, I think it's been almost a year since I've been here.
Oh, I mostly just meant for me getting episodes out once every 3 months versus weekly. But yeah, it's been a minute since I had you in. First of all, welcome back not just to the show, but to the public eye in general. I hope that all's going well with you and your family after your brief leave of absence there.
Yeah, very well. We've been doing much better. First Lady and the First Family were all doing pretty well. Well, better now.
Sure.
There's some issues to resolve, but enough where I can fully govern the country.
Well, good. We're all glad to hear that, I'm sure. Of course, the crisis of the day is the ongoing government shutdown, and we're recording this on Saturday evening, about 5 o'clock, so I'm probably actually going to release the last episode after we're done here. But just to kind of try and establish timeline. So the government's been shut down for about 16, 17 hours at this point. What is your administration doing to get Congress to let people get back to work?
So right now, we've basically been reaffirming our message to global labor leadership for the past various hours that we need to get a CR passed now. We're in extraordinary circumstances, like I mentioned last week. While we didn't hope for a CR again, unfortunately, with seemingly both budgets, of course, having their various issues that need to be worked out for a compromise, we are here where we need to get the government working for the American people while resolving these issues, and neither of those are exclusive of each other, meaning that I hope the left can reconsider and get a CR through while hopefully ensuring that negotiations continue fruitfully. But we need to get the government operating first. Mm-hmm. So until then, I'm going to announce here on television that, or on your platform, or so I apologize, but
podcast. This is a podcast.
That we aren't going to be proceeding until we can get a fully cleaned and clean CR to my Oval Office desk.
Okay, so that would be no additional terms other than continuing funding at previously approved levels until X date.
Yes.
No other specifications on that.
And we believe that will allow us to fruitfully resume negotiations. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How are those negotiations going, whatever you're able to say without kind of betraying private conversations? Because it seems like, from what I've seen both in the media and from some politicians, there's a growing move from the left and allies to simply ignore the right's budget. And as Congressman James Order said last night, 5 minutes before the government shut down, passed the For the People budget, and then he voted against the continuing resolution. Have you seen that desire to simply kind of push the right-controlled Senate and presidency aside and take over the process?
So basically, what I'll say is that I've been very much disappointed with how the left leadership has been handling the course of the budget over the week. Even though there were unexpected miscalculations with the revenue, our appropriations, unlike the left, were not calculated erroneously. So even with the adjustments made to the revenues that in our budget proposal gives us more than $1 billion in bi-monthly surplus, unfortunately, with left-wing stonewalling both the Senate and the Senate itself by refusing to give it full consideration, it just shows their unwillingness to work constructively, bipartisanly, in a public manner. And of course, with the private negotiations that are out there currently, we will say that while I'm optimistic that the will of the American people will be reflected by both sides, unfortunately, what we've seen so far is left leadership, at least particular members in left leadership's refusal to work in a constructive manner. Meaning to say that negotiations have been, in the past few days, have made progress, but unfortunately, partisan theater by certain members of the left leadership have delayed meaningful progress to be made. And here we are, due to these said tactics, unfortunately.
Right. Do you think that at the end of the process, there will be the votes there to get through what I have to assume would be a compromise budget? I don't see a path for either of the parties/coalitions' initial proposals, just with divided Congress. But with this dragging on for so long, and with the battle lines being drawn out this clearly and this publicly, is there compromises to be made, or are we just kind of stuck in the world of continuing resolutions for a while?
See, on our side, on the Libertarian Republic,
I think we're maybe having a little side, bit of
both congressional leadership
issue.
And in my administration, we've been more than clear. I do apologize. I'll repeat myself then. So,
thank you.
What I was trying to say is that Libertarian Republican congressional leadership and in our administration, while we have been more than willing to compromise and actually get a working budget done for the American people, we don't expect a compromise budget to have everything we want. It's, in fact, we would say short of some of our expectations. However, just because they don't fully come to the terms that we would want, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't put aside our ideology. Put our ideological desires at the complete forefront of the budgetary process, meaning we're going to compromise on things, and the left leadership can also compromise on things. So together, in a pragmatic manner, we can get a budget done. But unfortunately, it seems like even with that framework being established, members of left leadership once again refuse to put their heads together in this, and in fact have created an unnecessary distance, unfortunately. And I do hope that they can reconsider their tactics, which so far have been hurting federal government employees, workers, with many furloughs being announced by the State Department, Department of Transportation, and of course our court systems, which all of course were unforced errors that by members of the left coalition in both the Senate and the House, of not allowing us to get to allow us to not continue operations just because out of sheer partisan considerations. And unfortunately, like you mentioned with Congressman James Order, it seems like this sentiment reflects to the rank and file members of the Global Labor Party as well. And that is something that is immensely regrettable.
Changing directions a little bit, we're fast approaching the midpoint of your first term. How is the job compared to what you expected going in? And have there been surprises along the way, other than, of course, the unforeseen events that had you step away for a few days?
I'll say it's been quite an interesting journey. It's been, on one way, there are some things that were expected, the rigor, of course, and the intricacies that go along with making a coherent agenda, both domestically and here abroad. And that has been going however it's been going. I'll admit my term has been quite controversial, but again, controversy in the pursuit of ensuring proper governance for the American people is not a vice. In fact, as president, if you're not willing to extend your full capacities towards fulfilling your campaign promises, then you frankly shouldn't be president. So when it comes to the way that I've been governing, proceeding very much, I've been trying my best fulfill my campaign promises as much as possible, whether that be reorganization of the government, revitalizing our foreign policy, ensuring meaningful investments into our grid and whatnot. While the budgetary process has had some setbacks, overall, we are making progress, and progress doesn't come in one day. It doesn't come overnight. It takes time, and this is a gradual process. And hopefully, this gradual process over the course of the rest of the administration will bear some meaningful fruit for the American people. And referring to the other aspects of my presidency, I will say, as an executive, it's been quite an interesting lesson, so to speak, regarding the regarding various members of the government's willingness to fully understand the situation we face abroad. So as you know, with our recalibrated role around the world since the post-2018 reforms, we've made meaningful progress towards no longer being the world's police, at the same time we've left unintentional gaps in the execution of peacetime policies that have created challenges around the world, which is why actions taken trying to mitigate that have been, while much more intense than I would have normally wanted, the decisions made, whether that be the court order or anything, or the subsequent proceedings, have been made with the American people in mind, and I'm more than willing to be accountable for what I've done. I can defend my entire agenda. Even if it's not perfect in implementation, it is still very much the spirit of what I was elected to do by our process back in July. And that is a commitment I'm willing to uphold and continue to do so.
All right. Like I mentioned, we're kind of coming up on the midpoint here. Do you fear, and I take your word for your ability to defend the decisions that your administration has made, but do you have any concerns at all about potentially losing ground in Congress? Because both with the reincorporation of Puerto Rico into Dixie, two right-affiliated senators were removed from their jobs, so now we're at a 50-50 split, and Vice President Ian presumably breaking the tie in favor of your administration's goals. But at the same time, there's, rightly or wrongly, something of a media machine out there that seems to be deeply interested in casting your administration in the worst possible light. Now, I want to clarify here, and usually I'd say this for the monologue, but it's the role of the press. I'm here as well to push on things that need to be pushed on and to ask questions for the people. But there's a difference between doing, you know, good faith work in fact-finding and holding those in power accountable versus purely running agenda-driven hit pieces on your opponents. I think my personal favorite out of the collection came from Dixie News Leader, which simply put out a blood-red graphic that reads, "Elkridge shut down in full effect," which is, I guess, a choice. But there's a lot of orgs that are following that same pattern of the LRP shutdown, the Elkridge shutdown, the right being responsible for what's happening. So regardless of who is right on this issue and foreign policy issues and just other policy fights, do you think that the people are getting a full picture of what is going on, or is that being filtered through a lens that is not necessarily accurate and from those who might not... who might have an interest in presenting things in a certain way?
To your point, while I do respect a lot of the work the media does, I will say that I do think yellow journalism is abound once again, unfortunately, like it was in the past century. So what we do, I will say that the media, while they are rightful and into expressing their opinions and whatnot, I do think that at times they do fall short in giving a fully transparent analysis of the whole situation. For example, going back to a few weeks ago, when it came to the controversial decision of making the select deployments in the Gulf of Aden region and in the Haiti area out of humanitarian assistance and ensuring non-lethal economic mitigation from threats from other actors as a result of various changes that were going on in these regions, the media, I will say, fully, it didn't exactly want to cover it properly, and it doesn't seem like they were very interested in covering many of the real challenges that we face here at home and around the world. But of course, that isn't something that's completely unexpected, considering that almost a year ago, I remember when I was Secretary of State under the Sandoval administration, ABC News did posted an incomplete version of my remarks regarding the then administration's policy on a matter I can't recall correctly at hand right now, but on a certain policy. So it's not unsurprising. Unfortunately, it's a long trend in the media, whether that be my administration or predating it. But all I'll say is that I do hope the media continues to engage in good faith and whatnot. So even though I've been painted as some sort of Grinch, or as others would call it, austerity, mongering, whatever the terms have been used in, colorful terms used in various publications, all I'll say is that on my end, I'm more than willing to defend my views and articulate them in an honest manner, which is why I have, which is why I welcome all media publications that are, of course, verified as reputable and whatnot to attend various press briefings and engagements that we've had. And I've been proud to say that our administration, we've held multiple comprehensive press briefings throughout my time in office so far. And that is something that I hope to continue, so that the American people can truly understand what's going on in our government.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the select deployments, and I will say just, I will refrain from calling you a Grinch, but it was, you drew a lot of condemnation, partly from some of the old guard in the right, who had a much more traditional, well, maybe that's not traditional, a less interventionist faction of the right, let's say that, including reports that were never quite confirmed for a condemnation from former President Lampert, who I don't believe, to the best of my knowledge, ever confirmed that that was a quote that he gave, but it was reported. So what is, I guess, your, and I don't think, once again, best of my knowledge, all the caveats, grains of salt, but I don't know that foreign policy and this particular type of change was a huge issue when it came to the campaign. So what drove your decision to change course when it comes to America's role in the world, and what do you see that role as?
Well, what I'll say is that while the issue wasn't touched upon as much in the campaign, what I'll say, at least from my campaign, I did actually, in fact, put out a platform that did address the need to constructively engage on various geopolitical challenges that we face today, whether that be dealing with economic aggression through anti-competitive trade policy, or that be other potential threats that would lead to further instability from a military perspective. So what I would say is that our policy isn't against the mantle of non-interventionism, but rather our policy is more so of trying to constructively engage with our various allies and whatnot to confront the challenges that we as an international community on the whole face. Of course, this doesn't mean that I'm promoting a so-called globalist agenda or whatnot. Contrary to that, in fact, I do believe in national sovereignty and ensuring that the sovereign interests of various countries are respected and not interfered with, which is why much of my foreign policy has been in trying to ensure economic cooperation with various countries that we've had, such as Japan, where during our recent Olympic summit, we got them to commit to reconvening negotiations for our entrance into the comprehensive, progressive Pacific Partnership, Trans-Pacific Partnership, which, if we are successfully able to enter, will allow for hundreds of billions of dollars in economic integration, which will boost our economy, help workers be more competitive, and have a more vibrant exchange of information throughout various sectors that are critical to our economy's success. So don't think of it as, contrary to how it's been portrayed in the media, as neoconservative. It's not neoconservative as it's being realistic or being a realist of the current situations we are in or the current circumstances. But our policy is simply adapting to the realities that we live in today, and it's not out of some intention for nation building or imperialism. All we're doing, quite simply, is just responding the challenges that we have today that come from multiple threats and avenues that were that have came as a result of the bubble of our withdrawal from the various regions, which of course we're rightful to do. But as you know, all actions do have costs associated, and what we're doing right now is just dealing with the cost in a way that can mitigate and limit any damage. That, which of course comes in the interest of not only the United States, but of global security on the whole. And our administration's role is to ensure that the rule of law is upheld by various countries when it comes to practicing commerce and et cetera, in a way that benefits everyone and not to antagonizing any party. And that does mean making hard decisions at times to ensure that, but it's worth it for our national security. And of course, national security isn't an excuse for blanket violation of civil liberties in our administration, but rather in asserting our national strength in a manner that will better defend and protect against threats elsewhere in the age that we're living in today.
If you can spare us a few more minutes, we have a couple of listener questions, and it's been a minute since I actually took any of these, because usually they're not good, but there's a couple ones that are interesting. I'm going to rephrase this one just a touch, but there was a bit of controversy during the budget when one of your cabinet secretaries, the Secretary of Transportation, publicly disagreeing with your appropriations to his department, and some infighting is kind of expected in the new era of having bipartisan cabinets, but this was actually a fellow LRP member. Was there any fallout from that, or do you know like where the disconnect in communication happened there that would lead that fight to kind of break out into the public?
Well, while it was unfortunate that it did play out the way it did publicly, what I can say privately, at least, is that the situation is far more stable than it looks. Rather than the whole situation transpired due to, I guess, with the, of course, as you know, the late confirmation of our Secretary of Transportation, just a short time before the budgetary process was well underway and developed, and to the point where we came up to a proposal. The secretary needed to do some sort of catch up with everything and whatnot, and there was some initial miscommunication, but I do think everything is cleared up. And I do echo the secretary's remark, though, of what he mentioned earlier during his press release, where he wanted both the GOP and LRP leadership to come together and work for the American people in a manner that doesn't harm the various interests for the Department of Transportation. And I wholly concur with that sentiment. So what I would implore is that if we want to ensure the successful continuation and work the mandates that are going on in the Department of Transportation and elsewhere throughout our various executive branch, then I do implore the left coalition to get us an operating budget so we can continue many of these meaningful and critical projects that I would be more than happy to have my administration talk about in great depth. And in fact, Secretary Oliver's been doing quite a lot of good work lately from his developments, whether that be of trying to contract with green electric buses, or trying to implement public-private partnerships within the various arrangements we have with our rail networks and whatnot. So good work's been done. There have been some rather complicated initial communications, but the only way we can move forward, and the way we are moving forward, is if we can put aside the partisan hackery from either side. And on my end, I do affirm the point of being ready to make the compromises needed to get a budget done, and I hope that the left leadership will truly reciprocate so we can get good work for the American people done and continued.
I believe potentially last question from me, again from a listener. Do you have any plans after the end of this term that you're willing or able to talk about at this stage, or are you still kind of figuring that part out?
So the administration does have several long-term priorities that we're working and looking to explore, especially in the foreign policy realm, as we mentioned, with trying to basically try to fulfill the various objectives that we need to in order to meet our national interests and whatnot. So there's some work being done there. However, they're still very much under development. So they're not quite ready yet to disclose on how we exactly plan to proceed. But what I will say is that in the immediate term right now, what we're looking for is to make sure that Congress can pass a clean continuing resolution so we can continue the deliberations needed to do so in order to get a permanent budget for the remainder of the fiscal period. That is our first and foremost priority at this time.
All right, I'm going to take that as a little bit of a no, but I appreciate you expanding on it. Anything else you would like to talk about while I have you here that I didn't get?
Depends on what you're asking. There's a lot of things, tidbits that we could address and talk about, but
yeah, go nuts.
Right now, my focus is solely on. No, I was just saying right now my sole focus is on making sure that we can get our government back to operating, whatnot. And is there anything extra I can add? I mean, I'll say we've been doing good work on at least internally with our Department of Commerce, that's Labor and Commerce, that's working on some business grant related proposals and whatnot, and our Department of Treasury has been looking at some long-term policies to ensure fiscal stability. We're doing a lot of things. While it may not be public, there's a lot going on inside the administrative leadership in our executive branch throughout the various departments. Right now, I do want to say that those who were affected by Hurricane Ida, to make sure you're safe and stay well. And with the federal response being initiated last night, and I'm glad Drunk finally got something out this morning. I hope that residents in those regions in the Dixie area, in the state of Dixie, can finally be well protected.
All right, I'm going to try again. President Elkridge, thank you again for coming on.
Very much. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you again to President Elkridge for joining today. Remember to subscribe to catch all new episodes wherever you listen. The Weekly is a public record podcast. Thank you.